The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, good morning. Good morning. We got a lot to get to today. What a time, right? What a vortex of sports that we had this weekend. The NFL week four, the Ryder Cup with Team USA not only losing but getting trounced in Europe over in Paris. And also the Major League Baseball season is not quite over yet. Two of these 163 games, you know, teams are playing today to determine the divisions of the NL Central and the NL West, to determine who gets to avoid the one-game wildcard playoff. Oh, man, we got a lot to get to. Here was the great thing about this weekend for me. One, I was hurt all weekend. I was sick as a dog this weekend. And so yesterday, I couldn't sleep. I had this cold. It's just this change in the weather thing. A lot of times you get it where you get stuffy head, runny nose, that kind of thing. And I had, like, it felt like razor blades in my lungs, you know? So I woke up early. I got to watch the Ryder Cup. I got to watch a lot of football yesterday. Basically trying to treat myself to the rest and relaxation that comes from trying to recover from such an illness. So I started off with the Ryder Cup. I ended up with the Sunday night football game where the Steelers just looked awful against the Ravens. And it seemed like it was going to be a good game last night between those two teams. I mean, it felt like the Steelers and the Ravens were going to be in one of those epic clashes that they used to have. The Ravens went out to a 14-0 lead. The Steelers came back to tie the game, had a lot of momentum. We go into halftime tied. We come back, and then the Steelers disappear because the Ravens' defense is really good, and the Steelers' defense is not very good, and it was kind of a mess, and they lost their rhythm, and now the Steelers look like a team. It's very dysfunctional. While the Ravens, remember the Ravens going into this season, how the storyline was, Joe Flacco can't have another year like he had last year. That's it. Lamar Jackson is waiting in the wings. Drafted this guy for a reason, because the Joe Flacco experiment is going to be over soon. And yet the Ravens go to Pittsburgh and not only win, they take over that second half on defense, especially playing against a team like the Steelers that's a mess and have a lot of things to fix. We'll go over week four of the National Football League and how the United States lost the Ryder Cup next on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
How odd was it that we had, what, three overtime games yesterday and not one of them ended in a tie and two of them came down to, like, the final seconds? I mean, I think we had more than that, didn't we? Maybe, I don't know. I think we had three overtime games yesterday. None of them ended in a tie. The Raiders won in overtime. I caught the end of that game.
Bummer.
I was so sad. I can't believe I felt this emotion for a Cleveland Browns team, a team I grew up hating with all my passion. Now it's the Ravens. But the Browns, I grew up hating the Browns more than anybody as a Steeler fan. And all of a sudden, I'm rooting for them because they're fun. They're really fun. The Titans, Eagles game, that should have gone into overtime. So glad Mike Vrabel went for it on fourth down. And then they get the winning touchdown with Corey Davis catching a pass from Marcus Mariota. That was a very, very fun game. That was, I wouldn't say overly fun, but it was really neat to see the Titans like, oh my God, hey, we could actually win this against the Super Bowl champion. What do we do? It's like Rudy in Notre Dame. Like, do I stay in the game? Do I play? Do I come to the sidelines?
They just run around the field.
Oh my God. They were like,
what do we do?
Wow. Are we actually in this thing? Let's run a play, coach. It was so neat. The little Tennessee Titans are 3-1. Yeah, Mike Vrabel. I still don't know if I believe in him yet, but man, it was at least it was an enjoyable game to watch on my television yesterday. And then what was the other game? The Texans. They kicked two field goals and one at the buzzer to beat Indianapolis. When Frank Reich went for it on fourth down, and he didn't get it on the pass that Andrew Luck threw. That was a little low. And the Texans ended up winning in overtime. So nobody went to a tie, but boy, the NFL is certainly trying to get those. I do want to start with the Earl Thomas story. How heartbreaking was that? Earl Thomas.
All you know,
I gotta say,
all you need to know about Earl Thomas is that Le'Veon Bell's not coming back.
Oh, he's never coming back. He's never putting on a uniform. Are you kidding me?
He has that contract with guaranteed money.
Earl Thomas held out so he could get a long-term deal. The same story we hear every single year. So he holds out. He comes back. He starts playing. He wants to get a long-term deal from the Seahawks or trade me to somebody who'll give me a long-term deal. He even wrote about it in the Players Tribune, but whatever. And so the Seahawks go, no, he comes back. So he gets hurt yesterday, breaks a leg. He's getting carted off the field. You know how you have those guys that get those season-ending injuries? We see that same video all in all, just change the face, right? The guy that suffers the season-ending injury that knows it, he's on that cart and he can't look. He's crying. He's so upset. He knows, like, this is it, man. I just, this is awful. I mean, the list is forever of guys who have just had emotional breakdowns. I remember thinking of Luke Kuechly. Remember Luke Kuechly, yep, of the Panthers when he was, I remember there was an offensive lineman for the Broncos that had this. Guys just, they are overcome with emotion when they realize, oh my God, my season is over and my career could be over. I don't know what this is. I don't know what I have, but I'm in agonizing pain and I know this is not good. Earl Thomas had none of that while being carted off the field. None of that. Earl Thomas got on that cart. As that was driving away, he had that look of, you know what? I knew this was going to happen. I told everybody this was going to happen, and now I'm really ticked off. And then he flips off the sidelines of the Seahawks to management, saying, "I knew it. I knew this was going to happen."
It's almost you almost got the sense that he was a Cardinals player, and just you know what, you guys just adopt me. Here's my helmet. Please. Give me your helmet. I'm good.
This is the ongoing battle. And it's so weird because I consider myself an economic conservative, you know, yet when it comes to the NFL, I am so pro player. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And so I find myself, there's two sides to this, right? If you're the Seahawks management, here's a guy who wants a lot of money going into his 30s. And in the NFL, let me make this clear. In the NFL, they don't pay you for what you did. They pay you for what you're going to do, right? If you win a Super Bowl on your rookie deal, good for you. But they're going to give you a long-term deal based on that Super Bowl because they want you to win more Super Bowls. It's not a reward. They're always looking forward, not back. So if you're a aging quarterback that won a Super Bowl, you aren't going to get rewarded with a $25 million deal if they don't think you're going to last in the league two or three more years. So the Seahawks, I get it, right? He's still one of their best players, but he's approaching 30. The clock is ticking. You don't want to tie up so much money in a guy you're not even sure is going to be around. But at the on the same side of it, here's a guy who knew he was losing millions of dollars because he got hurt on the job. And that was, I mean, it was just, I was, you know what? I was really glad he did the gesture. I was really glad he did that because he could have just got on the cart and went, you know, back into the locker room and got checked out. But by doing that, he made that same statement. And like you said, it's perfect. Le'Veon Bell ain't coming nowhere near the Steelers until there's a deal in place. He'll just sit out and just be done until the Steelers figure out what they're going to do next. Trade him to nobody that wants him, or he'll just wait it out. I don't know. By giving that gesture, it really made the story better and more digestible. Because you now know where he's at. Like I said, he had no emotion other than he was ticked off that he was being carted off the field. So, no, I'm sorry, Earl Thomas.
In a way, I mean, it was symbolic of what's going on in the NFL right now.
Oh, no kidding.
That's the feeling you guys, like, you know, these guys just, all they want is just, they want contracts. They want long-term contracts with guaranteed money. Because at any given moment, their career could end in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, and the NFL has done this for years and years and years, where they took remember in the 80s when they started taking the fun out of the game? Remember the fun bunch and the Redskins and the Gastineau sack and the icky shuffle and all that stuff? And then the NFL started going, no more of that. We're not going to do any more of that. They wanted to start stripping the league of a lot of identity, right? You can't do it all the time because there's going to be star players, but the more that we can strip, the more that we can just remind people that these guys are replaceable. We'll bring in somebody else. You're actually rooting for the uniform, not exactly the jersey number. The better we can do that, the more we can do that, the better the league is going to be for management. And that's the direction that they're going. And the players have an uphill climb because they don't have the best union deal out there. And it's kind of heartbreaking because it was a tough gesture. But man, you're right about Le'Veon Bell. That's exactly right. I was thinking about that last night during the game. Right? The Steelers really need Le'Veon Bell. There's no question about it. James Conner is not Le'Veon Bell by any means, but they're not getting him unless they come up with a long-term deal. It just doesn't have that same feeling of work. All right, so we're going to get more into the week four. You nervous about the Dodgers today? We got to get to Major League Baseball.
Yeah. They got this. They got it.
It's not even nothing to be worried about, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to go into a one-game playoff. That's so scary, but it's not like your postseason's dreams are dying.
No, that's the thing. I mean, it's all the pressure is off.
Yeah, I mean, you're either going to go play a one-game playoff against the loser of the Cubs Brewers, or you're going to win the division and wait for the Atlanta Braves to show up. That's basically it.
Yep.
It's not like remember those, hey, listen, win, we're done. Yeah, 162 games, we can't decide.
No, that's why they're throwing out a rookie pitcher.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's like, you know, save our star. We're in the playoffs. You know, we're going to be, you know, either a one-game playoff here or one-game playoff next week. Or if we win, hey, we get some time off and then we'll start a series.
Is it weird that that Major League Baseball does it this way? I mean, they ask you to play another game. Whereas, like, the NFL, when the 16 – like, you ever seen the list of tiebreakers in the NFL?
It's ridiculous.
It comes down to coin toss. Like, they do this huge list. Like, if two teams are tied for the division lead – and there's this humongous list, like at the very bottom, if everything is equal, it comes down to coin toss. Major League Baseball goes, nah, just play another game. Just play one more.
Just
play
one more. No big deal.
No big deal. Disrupts pitching, you know, your pitching rotation, whatever. Nah, we're good. Just play one more game. Like, couldn't there have been run differentials? Couldn't there have been some sort of way you could have figured this out
other than playing another game? It would stop at
less exciting, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it would stop at run differential almost immediately because there's no way you could have the same amount of run differentials.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I mean, head to head, they couldn't figure out this out. Head to head, Dodgers.
It'd be a statistical anomaly.
I guess I don't know. I mean, it's fun. I guess. I mean, it's another game, but it's another game. It's like, ugh. Got to play enough. We just played 162. Now
no, you need 163.
Yeah. And I like to be the Marlins and the Pirates. They were scheduled to play today in the Major League Baseball. Don't bother. Yeah. Oh, don't even show up for that.
Yep.
Just call that. Just 160. 161 is good enough for you two. You're good. 163.
We don't need to roll that product out on the field anymore.
Don't roll that out just to get it in. Just to get 161 games.
Your fan base will be okay.
Yeah,
your season ticket holders, they're not going to be upset. They're gonna.
I didn't play a full season. Where's my bonus? Oh, too bad. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I wonder if they hold that to
him. Oh, yeah, I know, right? If there's some sort of clause that said they had to play a certain amount of games and he's one short and they were supposed to play today. Oh, God, Major League Baseball. So the Rockies and the Dodgers will play today for determine the NL West, and the Cubs and the Brewers are going to play today to determine the NL Central. And then when it's over, we'll get the actual playoff schedule for everybody.
The Braves are just sitting back saying, hey, we got good TV today.
Yeah, Braves are chilling back. Now, the Braves are going on the road based on the records. The Braves are going to go on the road to play whoever wins this game between the Dodgers and the Rockies. So that's where that is. And then the Brewers or the Cubs will play the winner of the wild card game between the loser of the Brewers and the Cubs and the Rockies and the Dodgers. If that makes any sense at all. Did I explain that well or did I blow that?
Nah, you lost me.
I think I know, right? Yeah, exactly. Then you carry the one and then you add six and then you... No, never mind. So that's how Major League Baseball is rolling today. We'll get more of week four in the NFL.
Actually, in a way, you have it's almost Little League rules
for these teams. Almost, yeah.
Because it's double elimination.
That's right. That's right. Good point. That's right. Good point. Or college baseball. That's right. Because if you lose twice in the next three days, you're out of the playoffs. You're done for those teams. That's a good point. That is a really good point. I can't. Yankees and...
MLB's heads are spinning now, like, ooh, can we make double elimination all the time? Then we can have 80 teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
everyone we'll put makes them all the playoffs.
In. Yeah, including the 56-109 Royals. What are the Baltimore Orioles? What did they finish at? What was our race? Oh, we got to get to that when we come back.
Yeah, we'll get back. We'll get to that.
All right, because that's a little bit more than just to throw it out there, because I want to. This is kind of a closeout of the regular season. We'll get more into week four of the National Football League, the winners and the losers from the weekend. Also, the Ryder Cup, the United States, a big loser in Paris. I've got a couple of reasons why that went down coming up on SB Nation AM, Tony D and Ron Culver.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, one out of every four batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstart Battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, before we move on to NFL and the Mitch Trubisky throwing touchdown passes, Ryan Fitzpatrick not throwing touchdown passes, let's get to the Chris Davis watch now that the season is over. So we've been doing for the last, week and a half or so, is talking about Chris Davis of the Oakland A's, who is leading the league in home runs, compared to the Baltimore Orioles, who have one of the worst records in the history of baseball. So the Orioles finished at 47 wins with 115 losses. They should go back to AAA. How did Chris Davis do in the home run tally this weekend?
I thought the Orioles finished. Didn't they finish with 46?
I have 47 and 115. They beat the Astros on Sunday.
They did.
Yeah, 4-0.
Well,
held the Astros to one hit. Things are turning around.
Let me double check my statistic analysis here.
All right. Again, Chris Davis of the Oakland A's in the home run race to get more home runs than the Orioles had wins.
He had 48.
48 home runs,
48
Chris Davis.
Home runs.
Congratulations. You have won the contest against the Baltimore Orioles win total. Well done.
But that's not even the big thing about Chris Davis.
Yeah.
He actually has a statistic that I want. It could be a record, and I want to say it'd be unbreakable.
Okay, which is what?
For the fourth straight year. So we're talking 4 years of Major League Baseball.
Yep.
He has finished the season with a 247 average.
Exactly?
247?
Oh, that's crazy. That's a statistical anomaly.
And apparently, if he had two more hits in what would be 2013?
Right.
Yeah. If he had gotten two more hits in 2013, he would have been five straight years. Because he finished the year 244.
So what you're saying is that Chris Davis is one of the most consistent players in all of Major League Baseball.
You know what you're getting at the beginning of the season.
You know what you're getting. Nothing more and nothing less.
You're just penciling in that, you know what, he hits dingers and he's going to bat 247.
Batting 247. About one every four at-bats, he's going to get a hit.
And if there's a really terrible team out there, he's going to hit more home runs than that team.
Exactly. Oh, Baltimore, well done. It's Ravens time now in Baltimore as the Orioles are done.
Hasn't it been Ravens time for like the last 2 months?
Oh, I know. Totally. It's been the Ravens time since the second the draft occurred.
I've seen the crowds at Camden Yards. It's been Ravens time for, since training camp opened.
God, what a bad baseball team. They were just in the playoffs like 2 years ago. Remember they had Zach Britton?
Yeah, they had a good cast. Was it Chris Davis on that team?
Yeah, Chris Davis, I think, was on that team. Yes. Along with Manny Machado, and they were a fine baseball team making the postseason. They lost to Toronto in the and I think it was either the wild card game. Yeah, it was a wild card game. I think they lost to Toronto, and Toronto lost to I can't remember. My brain is too fried. So now it's Ravens time. Ravens looked good last night in the second half. That defense looks really good. The Steelers had nothing. Couldn't get the momentum of the crowd on their side. Steelers are a mess. Absolutely mess. You know who's not a mess? The Bears. They just torched the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we knew it, and I hate to say it, but we knew it. Ryan Fitzpatrick eventually was going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. It was just a matter of time.
It happened a little sooner than we probably thought, though.
It was a little sooner than we thought. But eventually, this is what you were going to get. He wasn't going to play this lights-out football anymore. Now, he did in the second half against the Steelers, which made me think that I didn't think they were going to beat the Bears, because I knew the Bears' defense was stellar, and I didn't know the Bears could do what they did. But I didn't think Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to come to earth that like it just crashed. It wasn't like a mediocre game where you're like, right, he threw a couple of touchdowns and maybe a couple of picks, but it wasn't stellar, maybe 310 through the air or 290 with two touchdowns. No, it was pretty bad.
And he got benched for Jameis.
It's like, okay, I guess we know whose team it is now.
Yeah, I mean,
no debate any longer.
You know, it was kind of upsetting because he took the debate away from us. It's like I was all set ready. It's like, oh my God, he did it again. What are you going to do? And he gave us something to talk about. And I was like, oh, thanks, Ryan. You ruined the storyline.
And also, it kind of, because there was a bigger picture in Tampa Bay, which was Jameis Winston is kind of a problem, and they were taking him off the marketing, and they were like really deciding, is it worth it? I mean, even though we invested our time and resources into developing this guy, he hasn't quite behaved. It was kind of embarrassing what he did, and it was kind of disturbing what he did to that Uber driver in Arizona. Maybe we do make the switch to those days are done. It's Jameis's team now, and that's it. And that's the direction they're going, because what Ryan Fitzpatrick is he's a serviceable backup that will get you excited and then disappoint you and then get you excited again and disappoint you. But this is the one risk that we always talked about with Fitzpatrick is this. There's a reason why he has not landed with a team for a long period of time. He gets these starting jobs and he hangs on to them for a little bit. And then eventually they go, nah, we're parting ways. All right. And that's what he does. He's been bouncing around. I mean, I have to remember the teams he's played for over the years. He's been that much of a journeyman, and in reality, it's now they got a bye week coming up, and they'll play the Falcons in their next game on the 14th, and that is when Jameis Winston takes over. Good or bad, it's going to be Jameis Winston's team. That's it. And now the Buccaneers, which started out great and looked like one of the best teams in the NFL, are now 2-2. How quickly this changes. Boy, Mitch Trubisky, 6 touchdowns. I was kind of hoping he'd get 8 or 9 or 10. I know that doesn't, it's not how that works.
He was just throwing out there.
He had 5 touchdowns in the first half, so I knew they were going to call off the dogs a bit in the second, but I was like, man, get him 8 or 9.
Yeah, but he was just, I mean, I don't even think he's that good of a quarterback.
I don't either.
But
I don't either.
Did he look like, the elite of the elite quarterbacks yesterday?
Yeah, this goes down as one of those kind of statistical things that you go, wow, like one of these people doesn't belong, right? Like you have like in baseball, you see like a certain amount of players who've done this, and it's always Hall of Famers, and then one guy from like 1940 we don't remember anymore, right? Like that's the way this is. I think this is Mitch Trubisky. 6 touchdowns against the Buccaneers. John Gruden won. Okay, nice job. Against the Browns, who should have won that game, but didn't win that game. But Baker Mayfield threw a pick 6. The Browns turned the ball over 4 times. But the Browns, and here's, I'm not saying this like everybody gets a trophy. Believe me, that's not how this league is. But the Browns are at least more entertaining than they've been in the last decade. They're a lot more fun to watch because Baker Mayfield can play in this league. He's going to have moments like this. We said the same thing about Sam Darnold, right? Sam Darnold threw a pick 6, and then he came back in that game against Detroit and played really well. He hasn't played well since, but he still looks like he belongs in this league. He still looks like an NFL player. You just got to give him some time, work that stuff out, play it through, get a little patience, because he's got the tools to be an NFL player. He may not look it now. Baker Mayfield, same thing. He throws an accurate, fast ball. And he's got some. He threw a pick 6 and came right back and still was firing. And they put up some points on the board yesterday, just losing overtime. But at least they are more fun. I know this isn't participation trophy time, but if you're Cleveland, this is at least a telling sign that things are going in the right direction.
Back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we'll get more thoughts on the NFL in Week 4. I woke up yesterday early, just because I was sick, and I knew I was sick, and I couldn't sleep really well. My wife told me to take cold medicine, like the NyQuil stuff, and I don't like that. It gives me, I don't know, it's not nightmares per se, but I have weird dreams, and I don't know. Those night medicines drive me crazy, but I'm going to have to take one now. Nevertheless, on Sunday morning, I woke up early, and I was kind of excited because I wanted to watch the finals of the Ryder Cup, even though the United States was down 10-6, and there's only been 2 comebacks from a 10-6 deficit, one at Brookline in Massachusetts in 99 and the other at Medina in 2012. So it was big. It was a big hill to climb for the United States. And nevertheless, I woke up, went downstairs, and was watching the Ryder Cup, and they got trashed. The United States lost 17.5 to 10.5, which is that's a destruction. That is 7 matches that went in out of the 28 matches. They won 7 more matches than Team USA. That team was stacked with some of the best players in the world, and they couldn't beat a European team that wanted that cup so badly and played like they wanted it so badly.
Yeah, and they had like 4 rookies, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, and guys. I mean, Thorborn Olsen is a kid from Denmark and beat Jordan Spieth like a rented mule, to use a cliche. He beat him like 5 and 6 or 6 and 5. I mean, he's just an annihilation in singles matches. Beat Jordan Spieth. And Spieth, who's one of the best players in the world, is now 0-6 in singles matches at both the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup, which uses pretty much the same format. It's crazy. It's crazy. Tiger Woods lost his match to Jon Rahm. Sergio Garcia, who has had a terrible year, just missing cuts at majors, really not showing up, was brought on the team to be an emotional buoy for Team Europe, because he does play well in the Ryder Cup, and he's a very good Ryder Cup player. Won his match against Ricky Fowler. I mean, Sundays were just completely. The United States needed, what they really needed was, they wanted Justin Thomas as their best player. They wanted him to beat Rory McIlroy, which is a tough task. They wanted him, but they needed him to beat him early, because what they were hoping for is if they get out of the gate, and let's say Justin Thomas plays lights out good, he beats Rory McIlroy 4-3, right? And it's posted early. It's supposed to give the emotional boost down the line to the other guys. The problem was that match wasn't decided until the 18th hole, and by that time, Europe was on the board in like 5-6 matches. Some matches were just completely out of control, like Jordan Spieth's match was done early. Henrik Stenson, he was finishing up whoever he beat. So the United States once again goes to Europe and loses the Ryder Cup, and they haven't won in Europe since 1993. Now, Jim Furyk is to blame here, but the problem is, I think people are being too liberal with how they're blaming Jim Furyk. They're picking on his captain's picks, and his captain's picks were Tony Finau, Tiger Woods, Webb Simpson, and Phil Mickelson. And the reason why people are picking on him, this is a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. Because the course, when you have the home course of the Ryder Cup, so whether it's the United States or in Europe, the team that is home gets to set the course up the way they want, right? Seve Ballesteros did this when he was the captain of Europe, Valderrama, which is in the southern coast of Spain. He set it up the way exactly the way Europeans like to play golf, right? They like to play golf with, you know, tighter fairways where you can hit a lot of lower types of shots. It was going to be windy. Seve was a master at that. And even though it was a pretty close Ryder Cup after the singles were over, Seve got a lot of praise for how he set up the course to favor the European players. Thomas Bjorn did exactly that. Thomas Bjorn took this course that every European player knew very well because the French Open had been played there. He tightened everything up. He made the rough grow up, and you have to hit fairways. You could not play that course if you didn't hit fairways. If you missed them, you weren't going to score. That was it. And Jim Furyk, you're supposed to counter that. You're supposed to anticipate in your captain's picks. You're supposed to anticipate what that other guy is going to do to the course. And then make your captain's picks accordingly, right? I'm not going to have a free-willing Phil Mickelson, who's very inaccurate off the tee, throwing the ball all over a golf course that demands accuracy. The same thing in a lot of respects with Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods sprays the ball all over the place. He's not exactly the most accurate driver of the golf ball. So Furyk was supposed to take captain's picks of guys who are very down the middle, rather boring, can hit good irons off the tee, can hit three wood a mile and yet put it in the fairway. And he didn't. He took guys who hit the ball long and far, but when you hit the ball long, you don't always hit it straight. And that's the team he ended up having. And that hurt him. Mickelson, and I mean this because I'm a big Phil Mickelson fan, and I've been a Phil Mickelson fan since he was an amateur and won the Tucson Open. I think Phil has been a bright spot for golf. I like his style of play. Phil Mickelson was worthless this week. Worthless. He did not contribute anything to this team. He sat out all day Saturday because he was abysmal on Friday. His singles match, he lost that. And Phil Mickelson's Ryder Cup record is not good at all. It's one of the worst Ryder Cup records you have. In fact, I think he has the most losses of any Ryder Cup, but that's skewed because he's played in a lot of them. He's played in every Ryder Cup since 93. Here's how Phil Mickelson is unlikely to play in any other Ryder Cup going forward. He's 48 years old. But him hitting the ball into the water on 16 and conceding the match right there on the tee box that guaranteed the Europeans would win the cup is probably the most fitting Phil Mickelson way to end his Ryder Cup career. I mean, you can't get any more lower than that, which is I just plunked it in the water and I turned to the guy on the tee and said, we're done. And by saying we're done, they clinched the cup. That is so Phil Mickelson at the Ryder Cup. And it's sad because he's one of the world-class players of all time, but this format has just never suited him the right way. But I don't blame Furyk for these captain's picks. They were the best captain's picks on the board. Mickelson may not have been playing very well, but he did shoot 63, I think, in his last event before the choice was made. Tiger was playing lights out good. He won the tour championship, for crying out loud. But when he made the decision to put Tiger Woods on the team, Tiger was playing great golf. There's no problems with the Tiger pick. Tony Finau was actually a really good pick. He actually contributed points. He won his match in a rout. So Furyk though could have used some more guys that played the course that played the style of game that course demanded. But it was a European just blowout. I mean, they just made putt after putt after putt, and that's what you got to do with the Ryder Cup. And listen, the United States loves winning the cup. I get it. The United States wants to win the cup. You get the Ryder Cup back at Whistling Straits in 2 years. That crowd is going to be electric. It's going to be exciting. USA, USA, red, white, and blue is going to be everywhere. But it means a lot to Europeans. It means a lot to the European crowd. And they showed it. They were ecstatic. They were all over the place in that course. John Rahm hit a tee box, was on the first tee, and there's 6,500 people behind him. And he wanted to hit his drive with the crowd screaming. Like, he was waving the crowd to scream.
and keep the noise up while he was teeing off. Justin Rose was his playing partner, tried to calm him down, but Rahm was like, no, I wanted to feed off the energy of the crowd. That's a Ryder Cup. That, you don't get that in any other place but the Ryder Cup. And there's already snipping. Patrick Reed, who likes to snip at everything, had an interview with the New York Times, had no problems burying Jordan Spieth because he said, Jordan Spieth and I were paired up in the last two Ryder Cups. We did great. And now Jordan didn't want to play with me, and I don't know why. He wanted to play with his buddy. That's fine. I don't really care. But that you want to know why this power couple was broken up? Ask Jordan. Don't ask me. I told Jim Furyk I wanted to play with Jordan. Jordan didn't want to play with me. There's all sorts of, they do it every time they lose. The United States is always somebody to blame. There's always some snipping going on because they're not a team. They're a collection of individuals wearing the same jersey. That's it. I mean, that's all the United States have been. Every now and then they come together and they play well enough to win the cup. But this is 12 individual corporations. And then twice a year, once every 2 years, I should say, they come together as a unit and they go, oh, let's all be together and unified. But in reality, they're all individual corporations. In Europe, they have been teammates. They know teammates. They play on the tour together and they think about Ryder Cup all the time. They're always thinking about the Ryder Cup. Oh, I play good with this guy. He's going to make the team too. I think maybe we should spend some more time together, some practice rounds to get to know each other. We could be a pairing. Let's talk to the captain about it. Let's see what that's going on. They do it constantly. And the United States just doesn't happen on the same level. Very disappointing. I could have used the sleep based on my illness, but instead I woke up to that train wreck of a Ryder Cup for Team USA. So sad. Anyway, the course looked good in Paris. It was cold there. Did you see the hats and the gloves?
Yeah, winter is coming.
Cold. Winter is coming. It's always cold in Europe. It always feels like every time I see golf in Europe, it's freezing. British Open in July. Guys are wearing winter hats and gloves. Always cold. I'm thinking to myself, okay, it must be cold there a lot. But it was cold. It was chilly. Tiger Woods was asked how it felt. He went 0-4 at the Ryder Cup. He goes, well, it didn't contribute. But that, you know. Phil Mickelson was like, what do you want me to do? I'm getting on my private jet and getting the hell out of here.
No, Mickelson is becoming the everyman's golfer.
Oh, he totally is.
You know,
totally
just giving up, you know, two holes left, midway through a hole. It's like, ah, screw it.
Yeah, because here's the thing, right?
Hitting balls that are still moving.
Francesco Molinari was up two holes, all right, with three to play, okay? So basically by conceding, he goes up with three with two to play. So he wins the match. So Molinari hits the ball on the green. Okay, so he's going to putt for birdie. Mickelson hits his ball in the water. Now here's the deal. Mickelson still has a chance to have the hole. He's got to pitch it in from the drop, wherever the drop is. He's got to hit it in the hole from there. Now, it's very unlikely that's going to happen, but you never see golfers in match play at least not try, right? Because what's the worst that can happen? So you hit a ball, it doesn't go in the hole, great. You say to the guy, okay, I tried, we didn't make it. Okay, great. Molinari could have three-putted. So Mickelson could have hit it stiff, knocked it in for bogey. Molinari could have three-putted. He didn't hit it tight, and he just hit it on the green. Mickelson just went, we're done. Like, I'm not even going to try. Like, I'm leaving, which was the right play. I mean, it was the right play. But that's because he knew. I was like, I can't play. I stink at this. I'm not playing very well. I don't like this course. I'm not playing well. I'm not hitting the ball well. I've been pretty much worthless this whole 3 days, and I'm done. So I give Phil all the credit in the world because that must have been hard to do, to know that this is probably my last Ryder Cup and the last ball I hit went in the water, and I conceded the match that won the cup for the other team. That's what he had to do. And that's the last thing. That's the last moment he'll have in Ryder Cup. Unless he makes it in 2 years at 50, which I kind of doubt. But that's it. All right, 800-777-2907. We'll get more to the NFL in week 4, including some other games that were going on this weekend. We talked about Earl Thomas. We'll get to that more as well as we roll along this morning on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Rest in peace, MCA. SB Nation AM, Tony D, Ron Culver. Hit me up on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver. That's Ron with two N's. The New England Patriots roughed up the Miami Dolphins. Did we think anything? Did we think that wasn't going to happen? Was there anybody that actually thought that wasn't going to happen? This is the same
script. Miami.
Yeah, except Miami, right? Maybe even Miami knew. The Patriots do this every time they lose an embarrassing game on national TV. I would love to. If I have a free hour, right, I'm going to look up their schedule to find games that they lost significantly in the Brady Belichick era where you went, oh, wow, I never saw that coming, and how they responded the following week. And if that game was on national TV, I'd love to find out what their average margin of victory was the week after, something like that, because I feel, and maybe it's one of those statistics, Ron, where it doesn't happen more. It doesn't happen as often as you think, but because it's happened a few times that you think it happens all the time. But this feels like it happens all the time with the Patriots. They go play a televised game, Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, whatever it is, right? Maybe it's the CBS game of the week, the 4 o'clock game that gets the more national exposure. And they get beat up. And they get embarrassed. And Brady doesn't look good. And all of a sudden, we're talking about Father Time. And we're talking about the end of a dynasty, right? Is it Jimmy Garoppolo time? Remember that conversation after the Kansas City loss? Remember? Should Jimmy Garoppolo take over the team now, right? Remember that? And then what do? They went on to win, you know, go to the Super Bowl. This was the Patriots at what they do best in terms of response. When Belichick does that little act where he goes, it's on to Miami. That's coach speak for, I don't want to talk about any of this stuff. I'd rather just focus on it. But in a way, that's the mentality of the team. They really do look forward. They really don't look back. There looked like there were no lingering issues. And again, the Dolphins came in not only 3-0, but weren't we talking last week? They had one of the better offenses in the league statistically. They were doing certain things right.
Yeah, but to give us credit, there were reservations with it.
Of course.
You know, because it is the Dolphins.
I didn't shove them. I don't think I put them in. Did I put them in the top five, bottom five? I might have put them in like
did because
fifth or something.
I know I did just because yeah, it's I like, done that. They're undefeated and you're just like, yeah, oh, you kind of have to.
But
they are who we thought they were.
Sony Michel for the Patriots, former Georgia Bulldog.
Nah, you know what? I've been listening to people say, it's like, oh, the Patriots found the running back. The Patriots haven't found their running back. They found the running back for that week.
For that particular week. They've always done this. Sony Michel will fumble twice next week, and we'll never hear from him again.
Nah, or he'll have a decent game, but it's like, you know what? No, it wasn't his turn to shine. It was James White's turn to shine.
In the end, it was all about Brady. 3 touchdowns. I had him as my starting quarterback in fantasy, and I still got blown out this week.
Yeah, you did. I wonder who you played against.
Who did I play against? Did I play you?
Yep.
Did I? Oh, I got killed.
Yeah,
I always get killed. I try. I'm trying.